And we're back with you with the Positive Mind. This is Armand DeMille. Hey, friendly voice, huh? With the friendly voice of Michael G. Haskin. Beginning your day. Well, what did you expect? Expect. What a funny word that is, expect. You know, if you expect. I have here in the studio with me two beautiful faces. Linda Vanella, Jana Lemoniadis, also known as Jana Valerio. People helped me produce this program. And we were talking about expectations. You know, an expecting mother. That's such an interesting phrase. What is an expecting mother? It means a mother who is expecting that she didn't eat too much pasta, right? She's expecting the birth of a child, right? It's an expecting mother. A friend of mine wrote an article. In the article, she said, my father recently had a second knee operation in a year. The first time, things went poorly. Rehab was difficult. Later, he could still not walk well, or even important, he couldn't play tennis. He had the operation a few weeks ago. He's already doing much better. Different doctor, different outcome, and perhaps more significantly, different expectations. Expectations with physicians. With medical treatment, with yoga, with naturalistic healing, with taking bok choy root, you know, and, oh, I gotta get some of that. What are we talking about? Yeah. Anyway, burdock, right, stuff like that, doing all of these, and you're having your expectations, and you saw palmetto, and you're saying, oh, but this is going to make me do this or that. Expectations. And then they turn around and they say, well, how did you do on the saw palmetto berries? And you say, well, I'm not sure, because I was taking 49 of the supplements at the same time. But you see, we expect stuff is supposed to help you. So because of that, you get sold a lot of stuff, some of which is just impossible to even digest. All right. So the first surgeon on the knee operations had raised her hopes unrealistically. He told her father that in a few weeks he'll be out on the tennis court. Knowing what to expect colors so much of our life experiences, often more than we know experience itself. Like if we expect to spend $21,000 on a car, $20,000 seems like we've made a great deal. But if we expect to pay $19,000, it seems like highway robbery. Either way, the car is still $20,000. It hasn't changed, just our expectations. Think about this in romance. We will apply it. I started thinking about how we manage expectations after this operation and after a friend Amy told me she recently had her own cancerous thyroid removed. The cancer was contained, but one of her vocal cords were paralyzed. She wasn't warned about this, but since learning about it had a common side effect from the operation, and she read this on the internet afterwards. Oh, kind of side effect. Because if you ever look at the side effect of surgeries or medications, it'll be so many. Like 0.1% of the people start sneezing and they don't stop. So when you finally begin sneezing, if you put in prolonged sneezing following getting a bikini wax, somehow you'll find a correlation between the two. And you'll say, see, they said it was a side effect. So that's your side effect. So when you have side effects, you look at it differently than what you anticipate. Once you get it, then you know it was related to it. But how do you have these expectations? What do you expect? What do you look for? Now, these examples happen to be medical, but how we manage expectations applies to everything from dating to job searches to what presents we're going to get for our birthdays. It's so central in our lives. There are two sides of expectations. What we expect from others and what we expect from ourselves. What do you expect from yourself? What do you expect? You expect you're going to be creative. You expect you're going to be artistic. Do you expect yourself to be caring? Do you expect yourself to take care of yourself? I know a woman who steals from prior bosses. Listen to this story. She goes to work in firms as an assistant. She gets into the place and she works for a little while. Eventually they let her go. But what she does is she gets a set of keys. Then she goes work on with the next person. And then when the other people are not at their office, she goes there and steals stuff. Money, usually. Checks, deposits. And then she does this on a second job, and she has like 5 jobs working, where she just goes back. And once in a while, she sees somebody who works there, and she has to make up an excuse as to why she was there. Now, what does she expect of herself every day? She expects, I'm going to go out there and earn a living. I'm going to go out there and get what justifiably mine. What do you do? Change your expectations to tailor your own needs? I expect you to pay me what I deserve. Well, if your expectation is $100 an hour and the boss's expectation is $50 an hour, you're going to be angry at them the entire time. Take an event as mundane as crossing the street. We push a button. Some of us push a button. Not in New York, you don't push a button. You expect the light to change in maybe 30 seconds. It takes 5 seconds. When the light suddenly changes, when you stand at a corner and the light changes, suddenly, in your favor, you know there's a release of dopamine. You get a pleasant feeling. You walk across the street. Now, on the other hand, let's say it takes a minute or two to change. The negative feelings are much stronger than the good feelings, and you only get these when your expectations are not met. The negative feelings, the negative chemistry that goes inside of you is far more dramatic than the chemistry of the upswing of the good thing happening. So a negative event waiting at a light impacts on you far more than a positive effect. Positive effect, you get a little rush of dopamine. Those are nice. Negative effect goes into your bones and starts triggering persecutory negative. And if you're in a nasty mood to start with, it just makes you nastier. But if you're in a positive mood, if you're in a nasty mood to start with, the other one, the positive light change, it'll lift you a tiny bit, but not all the way. When you're nasty, you're nasty. When we don't hit our expectations, our brain doesn't just get slightly unhappy. It sends out a message of death or threat. See, when our expectations aren't hit, there are markers in our body that say, what we're anticipating is not happening. There's going to be danger. So let's say you're a tiger on the Serengeti. That's a hotel in Africa. You're staying at the Serengeti. You took a suite. You're a tiger, you're expecting to get a nice serving of lamb stew or something, you know. Let's order up. Let's get this local fare. And there's none around. Now your chemistry changes from being a comfortable animal to being one that suddenly has to get up and stalk, and you get mean and you get angry. When your expectations are not met, they translate to your body as life or death. So here's the danger with expectations. Is life threat behind it? You may think it's just a small thing. I hope he'll call me in the morning. But when he doesn't call in the morning, there's a piece of you that's reacting very, very strongly. This is Armand DeMille with my friends here. We're talking about expectations and the danger of having too many expectations, in as much as it sets your chemistry on a road of either anger or depression. What's the ideal way? The ideal way is to say whatever is, is. I'll take whatever it is. I can expect, I can train, I can program, but I'll take whatever is. Coffee machines. tea machines. Do you ever set them in your life? You ever set them? If you read the directions, they'll tell you exactly what to do. However, no matter what you do, the machine has a life of its own. And somebody gets up in the middle of the night, pulls the plug, changes the program. Whatever it is, you're not going to get what you want. So you wake up and you look, and your real question is, did it work or did it not? If it didn't work, it's okay, because you don't really expect it to work, because it never does. But if it does work, you feel properly delighted. You got any things like that in your life? 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls today. Expectations lead to adaptation. If you're not expecting, then what you're doing, you adapt. Now, this is what you were saying before, Jana, about your kids getting in school. You want to talk about that for a moment?
Well, I mean, I guess it's, you know, how well you handle your disappointments as well, right? Because, you know, when, for example, with children, they work so hard, they study, they work so hard, they take tests, and sometimes it, you know, it doesn't work out, or if they don't get into the school that they were hoping for, you know, how do you deal with that, with an expectation, with the disappointment?
So how do
And there's disappointments in all aspects.
But what happened in your family?
Well,
see, now, with a mother like you, with a mother like you, here's what I figure. Knowing you're so brutal, knowing you're so mean, knowing that you're likely to punish your children if they get even a B instead of an A, knowing that you stand over them with a wire whip and say, you miserable kids, I hate you because you didn't do good enough, then they must have great expectations of themselves. But you're not like that. You're a mushy mother. You're a mushy, caring, sweet, not overly permissive.
Not mushy.
Not mushy.
Not mushy. No.
Don't you kiss your kids?
Yeah, I do.
You're mushy.
Yeah, a little.
A little mushy.
A little mushy.
But with that strength, with that sternness that you have, what happens if they don't get into schools?
Well, I mean, they have to just they have to roll with it. They have to just, you know, say, okay, well, there are other options. You know, what are the other options? What, like, for instance, my son wanted to get into a certain high school he didn't get into. So he went to a different school. It was, and it wasn't such a big deal. You know, it's just not such a big deal. I guess, you know, I'm older, so I kind of, you know, I've lived a little. I know it's not such a big deal if you don't get into a school. You know, your first choice.
The other point of it is part of the reason you want to get into that school, believe it or not, is to get the love of your mother. You know, part of the motivation that makes this school so important is to get the love of your parents. If you have the love of your parents already, then you try for things, and if they don't work out, you try for other things. Linda, you must have run into that with your kids.
For sure, yes. There were several times when my children would talk about getting into a specific college. And yes, you know, I would certainly help and support them, but certainly they knew that wherever they went, they would be given the support and the help that, you know, was appropriate. So, yes, I just feel that that helps to encourage a sense of resiliency. So while we make plans, we have goals, I think we have to always temper it with a sense of resiliency and strength and know that what's going to be is going to be. Que sera, sera.
When we don't hit our expectations, our brain doesn't just get slightly unhappy. It sends out a message of danger and threat. Hope for the best, but expect the worst has a lot of truth. But not always. The takeaway message is to be adaptive. Understanding what's in your control and what is not crucial to manage in managing expectations. As a job hunter says, you may know it is tough to find a position in these economic times, but you can't do anything about it. So you go job hunting. You go job hunting like all the people who have been actors and actresses all these years who go on calls. And they go on calls. You know, that's the advantage of being in the arts. Nowadays, people looking for jobs, since we have such a high rate of joblessness, they're doing what all the actors, actresses, and dancers did for all these years. Actors, actresses, dancers, they go to trials and they go to interviews and they, you know, we'll call you. Thank you. That's the phrase you hear at the end. And you go off and you know, well, that didn't work, that didn't work, that didn't work, that didn't work, that didn't work. But you get used to it. You don't get anticipation. You don't get up there with an expectation that you're going to get hired. And what happens as a result of it is you still present your best foot forward, saying, if it fits and I fit, then it will work. Well, that's the way most of life is. If it fits, when it's ready, then it'll work. Sounds like we're talking about love, too. Sounds like we're talking about sex, too. Sounds like we're talking about affection, kissing, hugging, touching. When it's right, it's right. When it's not right, something always feels a little wrong. See? When it's not right, it's only partially satisfying, even though you get a little of what you want. So part of what we're trying to do, if we don't hit our expectations, is if we get a little unhappy, but we say to ourselves, what can I do to still get what I want? And there's where you have to expect, you have to look at your controls. Now, what controls do you have? Can you control the environment? Can you control the person hiring you? Can you control what you do? Can you control your talents? If you submitted a resume, can you say, can I submit another resume to you? Can I send you another one? Can we redo the interview? I remember I was once interviewed for Columbia College. I was looking for a clinical psych program where they took like 2 out of 3 million people. And I was there and I was sure I was going to get it. Why not? And they asked me some questions during the interview, and I flubbed it. I failed. He said, when you get angry, what do? I said, usually I tell the person, wrong answer. According to this clinical psych program, the right answer was, I consider what I'm angry about. I look at my anger inside, and then I examine it, and I see what I could do to dispel it. That was the proper answer. Me? I'm Sicilian. We say, at least say something. All right, but their answer made it difficult for me, and I couldn't get in, and I was frustrated, and I was really surprised I didn't get into the program. And I remember saying, okay, what's next? What are my alternatives? I didn't feel so terribly let down, but I did feel angry. So maybe anger keeps you from sinking down into a despair. Maybe just get angry. Now, you don't have to get angry at the people who are interviewing them. It's not their fault. But angry at the situation. 3 openings for clinical psychologists in all of New York. The number of people who could possibly find jobs, it's horrible in New York for clinical psychologists. So look at what you can control and look at what you can't control. A good analogy is sports. You do not find ski flawlessly the first time you try, but you don't expect to fail miserably either, or you'll never get off the chairlift. Another important factor in managing expectations is knowledge. You do research whenever possible. Try to get the information. In your expectations, you could at least have an idea of what's happening around. You make a decision guide based on the University of Ottawa. Has a detailed questionnaire to help you weigh the pros and cons of any kind of decision that you may want to make. Considering your choices as carefully as you can, arming yourself with answers, is the best way to set realistic expectations. But what about when you're trying to sell yourself to somebody else in a job interview as a political candidate? Should you lower expectations as you end up surprising others by exceeding them? That, of course, is the strategy we've seen so many candidates use during this election time, adamantly clinging to underdog status so that any success seems a surprise. Almost every one of the candidates is trying to present themselves as an underdog so they get people's favor. Hey, I'm the underdog. I can't show you my income taxes. I'm just one of you. The trick is to reassure that you are the best person for the job, whatever the job is, while at the same time not overpromising. It's a fine line to walk. 212-209-2900. Where did your expectations get you in trouble? Where have you found your expectations have pushed you to a point where you can't really deal successfully.
Not yet.
In this world. 212-209-2900. Mary Grogan writes about expectations on the website MindFood.com. Setting high expectations may be a good strategy if you can also allow the experience to be different from what you imagine. Often in clinical work, I ask clients what it means about them if their expectations aren't met. A sense of not being good enough is a common answer. So if you believe that you're not good enough because you haven't met your expectations, that's part of the trick. That's not what it's about. Trying to find, I'm sure it's a woman's problem. You know, specifically as women, do women have higher expectations than men, do you think? What do you think, you guys?
Well, women are more emotional. Women are tend to be very in touch with their emotions. So maybe they are a little bit more, their expectations are a little bit higher for themselves and for their loved ones and people around them.
That's easy, Jana.
I would agree with Jana, yes. Okay. I do believe that we tend to kind of map it out, and we kind of have sense, well, if we do this and this and this, then generally speaking, we should be able to expect a certain result. So I do think we probably do spend a little bit more time with planning that out, and perhaps do feel a little more disappointed when it doesn't work out our way. Mm-hmm.
212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I don't know if this is related to grief, but I lost someone in a parent in death, and I was just thinking about how we want life to be happy and a certain positive outcome, and yet people die, and you're like, I don't know if that's related to expectation, or the other thing I was thinking about is, We seek achievement and creating things and we're going to die, so what's the point?
Well, there's a good question for you. Who died, your father?
Yeah.
And he died when?
September.
And how did he die?
Old age.
Old age, he was like in his 80s?
In his 80s.
Did he suddenly get sick, or was he sick for a while?
He was sick for a while with Parkinson's.
With Parkinson's, so you kind of lost him a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was slow, right? Yes.
As you watched your father go, your expectations of him became less and less, right? Like you didn't expect him to respond as much, to be with you as much.
I think I kind of. Psychologically didn't want to face it and when it happened, I was like, you never think it's going to happen, but you know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And so what happened when it happened?
So then basically I'm just questioning the, is that sort of grief and a failure or the idea that life should be something, or we create something in life, but we're going to die.
The thing that I'm hearing, what's your first name?
Paul,
the thing I'm hearing is that you have these huge tears that you're trying to rationalize, that you're very sad about your father's death, and that you're trying to think it through, you're trying to figure it out, you're trying to make sense out of it, that he got sick and he died, you had a great love for him, it sounds. Did you ever get a chance to get close to him?
Not emotionally. I think he was like one of those not emotionally close.
Yeah. So it's a part of you.
I guess that's another issue. But I'm just trying to figure. You're right. I'm trying to figure it out in my mind about. But the idea of more philosophical, I guess. You know, we want life to be happy, and we create things, and we look to the future as if we have forever, and. Well, we don't. You know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to figure that out, that kind of...
And what do you want to figure out about it, Paul? What do you want to figure out? Do we, don't we, should I not expect, should I not live for the future?
Yeah,
should I live for the present? And if I lived for the present instead of the future, what would I do differently now than I'm currently doing, Paul?
I don't know.
Would you go to Europe?
Yeah.
I thought so. What part of Europe?
Probably Italy.
Probably Italy. Exactly right. Now, if you'd go to Italy, what would you do in Italy? Would you take 3 weeks and spend 3 weeks there?
Yeah.
Where would you go in Italy?
Probably go through the Roman artifacts.
Can you imagine yourself going to Rome, spending 3 weeks, not working, going through the Roman artifacts, and just taking your time on a little scooter and popping around there?
Yeah.
Can you picture that?
But I think I...
Wait. Don't go anywhere. Can you picture yourself doing that?
Yes, I could do... Yeah, I could do that.
Okay, you can do that. Now, I want to ask you something. Can you picture your father looking down at you from wherever he is, seeing you taking this time to run around Rome looking at artifacts? What do you think he's feeling as he's watching you from wherever he is?
Well, that's another question. Is there another place?
Well, let's say there is another place.
Yes, I guess. Yeah, I guess he would look at that as positive.
He would say, that's a good thing, son. He said, that's a good thing that you do something for yourself that takes you where you want to go now, as opposed to just living for the future. To live in some way so that you could feel some of the reward for yourself. That's a question you seem to have in your mind.
Well, is this related to your subject about expectation?
Absolutely.
Or with life, you know, the future or...
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the question. The question is, you're a man who's a sad man who's grieving his father, and you need to give to yourself. And one of the things you need to give to yourself is freedom. And I know you must have responsibilities and things that you have to do, but you're at an age now and a time now where this kind of freedom would make all the difference in your future world. Because you're what? How old are you? 42?
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, no, actually, 45.
I missed it. 45 years old. And 45, you got time. This is a great time in your life. So
okay,
it's...
Yeah, well, something about that did resonate with me would be expectations of me. So, that's good advice.
It's good thought. Thank you very much for calling in, Paul.
Thank you.
Sure. He sounds much younger than he is. He sounded 42 and he's really 45. That's a good thing. 212-209-2900. We got time for one more call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, this is Edie from Queens.
Hello, Edie.
I'm never disappointed because I just tell myself I'm great.
No matter what happens.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, you are not disappointed because you tell yourself you're great.
Yeah.
Right? And nothing could disappoint you. So you go out with somebody who acts like they're really silly and you get rid of them. When you go home, you're not depressed because Katie's great.
No, I married somebody who really, he's kind of whipped. So he just does whatever I say and he has money. So, you know, there's not a lot of conflict.
And it's perfect for you.
Yeah.
And this is the way you like it.
Yeah.
And this gives you everything you need.
Yeah.
How about the part that he's whipped? Do you like it or don't like it?
Yeah, I like it because it serves my purpose.
Yeah. And what would you like to have also? Would you like to have one place in life where you don't have the whip?
What do you mean?
Would you like one place in life where you don't have to control someone to love you? But they,
I don't think it works between us because he likes to do, he doesn't want to make decisions, and I make decisions, and so we're
happy. I understand. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Thank you very much. Shows me your expectations always default to you loving yourself. I like it. Okay. Listen, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music and more of your phone calls at 212-209-2900. Harry James. Harry James. Harry James and the orchestra. Backstreet Boogie. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're talking about expectations and taking your telephone calls at 212-209. I just got the hiccups. 2900. I'm going to meditate on a glass of water. Watch them go away. Hey, Linda, what was your question?
Yes, Armand. I was wondering, what would you say would be the determining factor as to how two people could perhaps go through a job interview, as you describe, and both will not get the job, and how one seems to be so much more resilient and be able to, okay, next job, and the other one will really actually drop into a very severe sadness, despair, depression, and we see that.
What do you think? What do you think the reason is that one person having the two same behaviors, no, two people having the same behavior will have different responses? And the obvious one is, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess we'd have to go back to the very basic constitution of the two people.
And the constitution includes what?
Well, one might have a more cerebral, more thinking approach of resiliency. Well, this didn't work. Let's move on to the next. Whereas the other one will be devastated by the feelings of sadness and grief and not be able to kind of cognitively put this in perspective that his unemployment is high and that maybe the expectations were a little bit over the edge.
So what you're saying is, according to where your mind is at any given moment, right, you could take it badly or take it okay. You can say this job wasn't meant for me, or you can say it's not the right time, or you can say, darn it, it's me, they just don't like me. But now we can take that further, because you could have gone in there in a bad mood. What if your mate had picked on you a little earlier, and she was angry with you because, you know, you never do this, you never do that, and you're carrying that with you. Now you go for the job interview and you feel like a lowlife. You feel depressed. You feel horrible. Your own wife hates you. Now you go in to try to get a job and you can't lift your spirits and you don't get your job. Now you're walking out and you're twice as depressed because not only do the job not want you, but your wife doesn't want you either. So there's a second factor, which could be your mental set walking in to the expectation. A third is when you expect something to save your life, the lottery. Right? I'm going to get this lottery ticket, I'm going to win this lottery ticket, and it's going to make everything better for me. Another one that's a real difficulty. But the most important one that you refer to is that funny gene. Oh, my God. In the genetics, they have learned that there are certain genetics that tend to lend people to more depression than others. And it's so specific that it's an allele. It's a pair of chromosomes. And these chromosomes, if you have the short ones, you tend more to depression. Whereas if you have the long ones, you tend more to non-depression. So it's as far back as all the way inside your genetics. One of the interesting concepts, questions is, do you inherit it? And another interesting concept around this genetic inheritance, the one about having the short allele and the long allele, is perhaps it skips a generation. Now that's very interesting. So think about your grandparents. How is your mood or attitude like one of your grandparents? Which of your grandparents would you say you identify with the most? Jana, what about yours?
Well, I guess probably my grandfather. My grandfather was sort of, you know, he just went straight ahead in life. He just, you know, he had this attitude where he just kept going and he didn't let things really bother him too much. And that's what I tend to be like as well. I don't let things really, but like I say, okay, you know, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to be strong. I'm going to be tough. I'm going to fight on, you know, if I'm faced with a real disappointment. You know, I tend to try to think about, you know, how lucky I've been to have people around me who have inspired me to do that as well.
Skipping a generation. Do you ever think about your grandfather?
Yes.
Yeah, right. What about you, Linda?
Yes, I would agree with that. I can definitely relate to the personality type of both my grandparents, my grandmother and my grandfather. And I tend to, my mother will say, gee, I'm such a warrior. And I seem to see I have her mother's, my grandmother's resistance a little bit more entitled to, let's just bring it on and let's make our plan. But at the same time, with reason, be resilient to whatever's going to come my way. So, yes, I'd say I relate to my grandmother very well.
Your grandmother?
Yes.
See, your grandmother was a toughie.
Yes.
She walked around. She was strong. She took anything that came. She saw nothing as tragic. But you see things as tragic. You get upset. How do you like your grandmother?
Yes, I get upset, and I can feel, and I can cry, and I can grieve, but I think that it doesn't ever put me in a place where I feel despair, I feel depression, I can feel sadness, certainly, but I feel that, you know, I could get over it a little bit better than I see with other people around me, so.
So there's an advantage to having the attitude and experience of a grandparent with the consciousness that takes you even beyond them. Because they may have been wonderful folks. But if you add your knowledge to it, they become even more wonderful. Come a little smarter yet. Do it with a heart. 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls. This is Armand DeMille with grandparents around. I had a grandparent. His name was Joe. And he was blind. And he was a blind carpenter. He's a carpenter who went blind. Now imagine being a carpenter who goes blind. Well, in the corner of where I live, there is a cabinet that he built while he was blind. It's got glass shelves. It's got knobs. It's got everything. He did it all by hand, all with feeling. Right? He just did it because he refused to give up. Yeah. Some of that inside me, too. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, my goodness, that's very confusing.
It is confusing, isn't it?
Yes,
what was the confusing part?
Because I can hear everything you're saying, and it just sounds like you're talking to somebody else, like you're getting ready to talk to somebody else.
And you don't know
think
it's you.
Actually you.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But it is you I'm talking to.
It is. It's me.
All right. And who are you?
My name's Jamie.
Hello, Jamie. Tell me about you and expectations.
I guess I was just calling because I just realized how much my expectations can harm me in relationships, I guess, because there's two things that have happened just recently. One, just this last weekend, with a guy that I really like that comes and visits from LA, and him continuously saying that he wants to see me and then not seeing me at all. And I felt so disappointed and so upset by it, even though there was no like exact promise or exact date. It felt like it was my fault because I expected too much, but then also I also see the point that he also was telling me certain things. But that was one thing. And then something that's coming up is there's a guy that I actually really like just moved back into town from Paris, and he has told me he wants to see me. It's like the same thing. And he wants to like go out to dinner and have a drink but he keeps wanting one of my good guy friends to come with us that he's friends with. And I'm just so nervous about my expectations that I almost don't even want to go, even though I really like him. So it's just, I guess that they get in my way.
It sounds to me like you never like getting angry.
I hate it.
Well, you hate anger more than just about anything.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I do think it's good. I mean, I think people should do it, but I have a hard time doing it myself.
No kidding. Why do you think you have such a hard time expressing your anger?
Because I actually used to be really good at it, but it for me it was like the reason why my long-term relationship ended. In my head, that's the reason why. I never got a reason is because I was very good at letting people know when I was unhappy or when things weren't going the way I wanted them to.
Sure, and maybe you did it too much.
Yeah, and I think I went overboard. And so now I'm going the opposite way.
Yeah, because the results you're getting are the results of passive-aggressive functioning. Okay. You're doing the passive aggressive. And what's happening is you're not nailing it down. Guy says, I'm coming to New York. I'm going to be seeing you. You say, when? Where? Exactly. Okay, we've got a date. 4 o'clock. Your room.
Right.
That's what people who are not passive aggressive do. Passive aggressive people say, okay, call me when you get here, and I'll be sure to answer the phone, and maybe we'll get together at this time or that time.
Yeah.
Now, the trouble with that system is, very often the person on the other side doesn't feel the connection to you.
Okay.
You know, I say the following, Jamie, force them into your physical presence. Force them there. Make sure they get there. Then mm-hmm. open up those blue eyes of yours.
They're brown, but go ahead.
Open the tent, stare at them with those brown eyes and let them know who you are.
Okay.
Because okay. from a distance and from a telephone and from a text message, you're not being had. Now, I hear you on the phone. You're a vibrant person. How unfortunate these guys missed their dates with you.
Well, I think they're. I think it's unfortunate, personally. But it's also. I mean, it's true that I don't let. I'm also scared to let them know because I do like them and I do.
Well, tell me about
them,
the guy from Europe. Who's the guy from Europe?
He's. He's just. I don't know. He was here studying like about 4 or 5 months ago, and I really liked him. And I, you know, you can just tell when someone sort of likes you as well. And I, he did, but he had a girlfriend at the time. So I kind of didn't stay around him, or I tried not to be around him as much. But I found out later that they had broken up before he left, and he kept saying he wanted to keep in touch, and he was leaving right away, and I asked him out on a date, and he never responded because he never actually got the message, the email. So it was kind of an awkward thing because the night he left, I said, did you ever get it? Because I'm really embarrassed, and he was like, oh, no, I never received it, blah, blah. Anyway, now he's back. He just got back a couple days ago, and he just kind of has written me every once in a while, and he let me know he was coming back into town and all that stuff. And now he just wrote me yesterday actually and said, you know, would you like to go out for dinner or drink sometime this week? But it was also with my friend that he feels comfortable with, like a friend of mine that he was friends with.
Yeah, that sounds funny.
Yeah, right?
That sounds funny. It sounds funny. Yeah. So what would happen if you said, okay, my friend will be there and your friend's not there?
I don't know.
What'll happen?
I would have no idea. I'm sure he would get really... I don't know. Actually, I have no idea. I have no idea. He might get married.
See, I'm getting you to take the aggressive spot. So let's say you say, okay, I'll make sure I invite him. I'll see you there at 2 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And you send an invitation.
Uh-huh.
And the guy doesn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's up to you to use your charms. Jamie, are you good enough to win this man over in person?
Yeah, I actually would prefer the guy not to be there. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
Yes.
So send the emails. Send him an invitation to the wrong date by mistake. No, I mean, but you have the power. You have the strength. You have mm-hmm. the love to get him there. You've got to take a more aggressive step than you're taking.
I know. I can't. I know. I'm just scared. That's pretty much what it comes down to.
Yes,
I'm just nervous.
So what's going to happen? What's your expectation? Let's say that it doesn't manifest.
Mm-hmm.
How depressed will you be?
I think that's the scary part to me. Because right now, at the moment, it seems to affect me more than it used to.
Yeah.
Where I do feel I'm pretty sad and pretty disappointed and pretty... Yeah, pretty sad at this point, and it takes me a little bit to talk myself back up again. Even though I feel like I'm fine, it's just it makes me very nervous. I guess that rejection makes me very nervous.
Yeah, you're a lovely human being, and you're probably barking up the wrong trees, probably finding the wrong people for the right things. But it sounds to me, Jamie, like you're a growing being, and
right.
this will all be kind of funny stuff when you look back on it later.
You'll
make better choices.
I hope so.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
That didn't work.
There it is. Yes, it did.
Oh, yes, it did.
Huh. Yes, it did.
My name is Jamie also, believe it or not.
Hey, Jamie also? That's a funny last name.
Thanks, Armand. It's nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Well, I've been thinking about my expectations with my girlfriend, and they never work out for me either. Do expectations get in the way of goals? Was my question.
Well, let's say expectations of your girlfriends. Expectations of your girlfriends, were you expecting them to stay the same, or were you expecting them to change?
To change.
What do you want them to change from, too? I mean, do you find somebody who you like and love, and you get close to them, and what happens next? What do you do? I want you to be more what?
My situation is she doesn't seem to help to want to make the world a better place, and I do. And because of that, I'm about to throw her out today.
Because she doesn't want to make the world a better place?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
Well, here's the deal. The deal is, I understand really what you're saying behind what you're saying, but the deal is that this is something that we take on our own. If I choose to do something to make the world a better place, the person who is with me will eventually want to do it because they see my beauty in doing it, but they're not going to want to do it if I keep faulting them for not doing it. Now, you're the kind of a leader, Jamie. You're the man who's a leader. You got to get people to follow you into battle. You're not going to beat them into battle, you know?
Yeah, I don't think this is the soldier for my group.
No, huh?
No.
No, did you ever ask her why?
It's a drug addiction.
She has a drug addiction?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very difficult. She's following a different battle.
Yeah.
And in that way, with the drug addiction, there's very little you could do except bring her to help.
That's what I was thinking of this afternoon.
Bring her to, what are you thinking about, going to an Al-Anon meeting or a...
Oh, they're going to take her to a rehab. Or suggesting she go, because I can't make anybody go.
Well, the place you could do is you could at least go to one of the what kind of drug is she doing?
Crack.
Okay. It's rough stuff, but there certainly are rehabs and groups to get her at least to start with. You know, that's very tough.
Yeah, I hope so.
Jamie, it has its own voice. It's funny that a guy like you, such a giving man, would find somebody who is so destitute.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's funny how you could take this beautiful man that you are, this glowing kind of sunshine guy, and put that on something so deadly, so moonstruck, so, you know, something as big as a crack addiction. Yeah, one would imagine that all the love that you have and the crack would balance itself out eventually, and that's what you hoped for. You hoped for my being who I am would help her through this.
Yes, you're good, Armand.
Yeah.
But I always enjoy listening to you, sir.
But it's a bigger thing than you. You know, sometimes the dedication is even bigger.
Yeah, true.
You know, sometimes, Jamie, people who do crack find a kind of a place inside them where they are reunited with the parent of their fantasy. Now, I'll give you an example of this. Your girlfriend, let's say she had a father who was a mean father or a missing father.
Missing.
Was her father missing?
Yeah.
So what she could do in her mind is create this missing father, and then with the crack, for a moment, her mind slips into a place where she's being held by him. Now, one of the things I know she loved about you is the way you held her.
Yeah.
So this being held is very important. And one of the things she finds with the drug is that she could be held for a short period by the things she always missed. That's very, very tough to beat. It's very tough to beat.
Yeah.
It's very hard. So maybe part of what you're doing is embracing her in a different way, saying it's time for you to get the help. I've held you as much as I can, and if you do get the help, I'll hold you even more. But if not, we're going to have to separate.
Thank you, Armand.
Man, you're a good man, Jamie. Thanks for giving what you give.
Thanks.
Yes, very often with drug addiction, we find people reconnecting with missing parents. And if you find the missing parents, you very often find the source that you have to touch in order to help them get off the drugs. It's very difficult. Get off the drugs. It's such a terrible expression. Get off the drugs. It's like get off the chair. Get off the table. Right, no. No, leave the safety of the drugs. Leave it. Hey, we won't be back with you tomorrow on Wednesday as we normally are, because it's the fourth Wednesday of the month. And here at WBAI, we have a calendar strategy. Never let you feel comfortable. So we'll be with you again the following week on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then we go into our February fund drive, where we have a lot of fun. So if you want to get in touch with me, go to thepositivemind.com. My friends, send me an email, go on the Face page, make a comment about today's work. We love you. Bye-bye for now.